I'll still record the whole. Oh, this is 100. Look at that.
Exactly. This like underwhelming. We have no guests, no special, nothing. It's just like,
not true. I didn't take out the lost thing from the run sheet.
Oh, is that good enough?
Yeah, no, it's we can keep it short this week. We'll do 45 minutes. It'll be the weakest 100th episode anyone's ever done of a show.
I mean, that's our goal here, right? To underwhelm as often as possible. Hello and welcome to the Android Police podcast. My name is Daniel Bader. We made it. It's 100 episodes. We did it. And to celebrate, we're doing nothing special.
The bare minimum.
Just
truly, if this is your first episode, pick another one.
Yeah, just go away. It's not worth it, folks. No, not only is this a show that we have not really prepared anything special for, but I am currently... There are roofers right outside my office just banging away, trying to fix a leak. So we're also not going to use the good sounding recording because we're going to have to use the background audio suppressed Google Meet version. So you're actually hearing me in worse quality on our 100th episode, just to kind of bring it back to day one, right?
Lies.
But think about it this way. You're hearing Daniel how I hear Daniel when we record this. So really, you're just hearing the show from my perspective.
Oh, yeah, that's
true. It's kind of an immersive 100th episode.
This is the VR episode.
Exactly.
Actually, this is presented to you in spatial video. But instead of it actually being spatial video, it's in your mind. So close your eyes, relax, and just picture an open space where we're sitting in a beautiful green field, and there's two chairs, and there's, for some reason, a really fancy lamp. And two hanging microphones. What else do we want? Do we want a fireplace in this?
Fireplace
in this
good.
In this open green bucolic space? I like a fireplace.
With a chimney that goes nowhere. Because we're outside. Yeah,
that's a good idea. Yeah. We're just polluting. The chimney's just going up into the atmosphere, just polluting the world.
Jules, if you cut a second of this.
I'm reading this book right now called Filter World. And it is by Kyle Chayka. And it's a really interesting book all about how algorithms flatten and destroy culture and how they've been doing it systematically for the last decade. And I'm always going to think of this book now whenever I just create a tweet in my mind that I never actually tweet.
Yeah.
Because we're all posters, and we all just like, for a while there, whenever we were on Twitter, we would just like think in 140 characters. And he's going over kind of like how we got to this point and how big tech has just shaped not just the way that we communicate, but like how we consume all media. And then I think back to like this week, how Apple added like spatial personas. And I saw all these demos of people playing chess with their personas. Mm-hmm. Have you seen this?
I've seen the spatial personas. I haven't seen the chess demo.
You haven't seen chess. Oh, you should seek out the chess. But yeah, I mean, like, that's the future of podcasting, obviously. You're all going to wear your three body problem styled VR headsets and just look at us sitting in a big green field with a hanging lamp and a fireplace. And
this is terrifying. Sorry, I just saw the chess demo.
Isn't it terrifying? It's absolutely crazy. It's like the first time that I've seen the just pure dystopian potential of the Vision Pro.
Yeah, this sucks.
Or it's incredible. It depends on how you feel about chess.
Has there ever been an Apple gadget that kind of came and went in the way that the Vision Pro feels like it has? Does it feel like the Vision Pro is already kind of an afterthought? I don't know. I'm sure Apple's going to come out in their next earnings report, or maybe the one after that, and be like, it's a huge success. It's exactly what we wanted it to be. We can't wait to bring it to more people in the future. But it just, to me, it's like, even the YouTubers seem to have like left it behind. I don't know. Like lots of people being like, yeah, it's gathering dust right next to my Quest. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, I think that just speaks more to VR than to the Vision Pro itself, right?
But Apple's supposed to be, you know, better than that, right? Like they're supposed to be the company that makes it happen.
Yeah, but I think the first year of the Apple Watch was also pretty low key.
It's true.
Like, look That's at this true. Beautiful piece of jewelry that I'm wearing.
Speaking of true posters, did you see Sam Altman's tweet last night, perchance?
No. I stopped getting notifications whenever Sam Altman tweets. That was definitely a part of my routine for a while.
It's true deep thinking. If there's one man that I want leading us into the future of AI, it's Sam Altman.
Okay, I think I know the tweet you're talking about. Can I read the tweet?
Go ahead and read it. Yeah, read it.
Okay, I'm going to read it to everybody live. Okay. Movies are going to become video games, and video games are going to become something unimaginably better.
Now, if this isn't AI, the AI hype train, like, condensed in a single tweet, I don't know what is.
No, but the worst part is that this has 2.3 million views.
Yeah, 27,000 likes on this one.
You know, you talk about Filter World and how, like, engagement bait is just the reason that Twitter exists today. It's shit like this.
Yeah.
Just absolutely gobsmacked at how beautifully said that was. So intelligent, this guy.
I put this in a group chat earlier. It is truly just like big first time smoking weed in a college dorm energy coming off this.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, movies are going to be video games, man. And you know what? Video games, something unimaginably better. Like, come on.
But also, like, that's what I got from Sora. Like, you're just creating random videos of prompts.
An alien walking through quote unquote New York.
I mean, that is 100% like freshman smoking weed in his dorm, just like coming up with bad poetry ideas.
Yeah.
Instead, now you have a text prompt that you can create random videos from it with. Anyway, we should probably, this is our 100th episode. So we've been doing this for 99 episodes. It took us a long time to get this good, is what I'm saying.
Yeah. This is when we reach the level of professional.
This is where we shut down the show. This is where we say, that's it. It doesn't get much better than this. It's like George just throwing his hands up and leaving the room because it doesn't get much better. That's it, folks. Like we've peaked. Google may charge you for generative AI search in the future. Let's talk about some Android stuff. So, okay, that's the first on our list. This, I think we can be very clear here that there wasn't a whole bunch of like Android news this week. I think the first one that really caught our attention, though, was this report out of the Financial Times that Google is going to add, quote, certain AI-powered search features to its premium subscription services. So there's a bunch of ways to interpret this. One is, how will Google deal with that sort of parallel tension of search brings in ad revenue and ChatGPT and other AI companies are eating its lunch on the search side of things? So they have no choice but to add Gen AI to their search product, but they can't monetize SGE nearly as easily. So the obvious answer to that is to monetize SGE through subscription and then just leave search kind of as it is, or add generative AI to search in like a very simple way to summarize search results and questions and things like that. I suppose this makes sense if you're looking at it from the perspective of the first Gen AI product that Google launched was a version of Google One that included Gen AI features. Then we also have to remember that like Gemini is its own product. And I will just implore you to go back to, I think it was like three episodes ago, where we ran the gamut of all the things Gemini is and will be, because that is by far the most confusing product line Google creates.
And we're a month out from I/O, where they will inevitably make Gemini like seven more things.
Right. So I think this makes sense. Google doesn't want to disrupt its search business, its AdSense business too much. So it tries to create. Also, this is what every other company is doing with AI right now, is that it's building it into a subscription model. So that doesn't surprise me. I think Gemini itself will never really get off the ground until Google integrates it more effusively with search. Like, how many times have you gone to gemini.google.com in the last like month?
Probably five.
What did you use it for?
The last thing I used it for was, this is probably too inside baseball. Yesterday, AP's Taylor Kearns was DMing me about a piece we were working on together about the 6 months of Pixel 8 photos that should be live around the time this goes live. And he said that his intro was bad, and I had Gemini write a new intro for it and shared it with him. And he said, this might actually be better than what I have. And then he said he doesn't like its tone, though. So that's my most recent Gemini thread on here. I also yesterday used it to jokingly generate a list of the top video game icons, because there was this BAFTA list going around that said Lara Croft is more iconic than Mario.
Excuse me? Who says this?
There was a BAFTA Game Awards thing that they're going to honor Lara. Let me see if I can find it.
Are you saying Lara Croft or Lara Croft?
Lara? Right?
It's Lara.
Yeah. Did I say Laura?
Okay, I thought you said Laura.
I might have said Laura. Didn't mean to. It's Lara Croft.
I mean, it could be like Laura when you're British. So people at the BAFTA Awards might have said Lara Croft.
All right. This list is actually more important than anything we were talking about AI. So I shared it with you in the chat. And according to this list, Lara Croft is the most iconic video game character of all time, above Mario in second place. Agent 47 is third, above Sonic in fourth. Sackboy from Little Big Planet rounds up the top five. It is a psychotic list, I would say. To be honest, it reads like an AI generated list of just giving you 20 random video game characters. There's two different Baldur's Gate 3 characters on here, for example, and I'm aware that this game is very popular. It also only came out last year. I don't know if Shadowheart is more iconic than Steve from Minecraft, for example. Or Pikachu. You know what? Better example. Ranks above Pikachu from Pokemon.
No, this is the most unhinged list I've ever seen of anything in my life.
The longer you look at it, the more you're like, hold on. None of this makes any sense. It's great. It reads like rage bait, but it's like a BAFTA press release that they're going to hold. Like, it's not like.
Where is Samus?
Not on the list.
Samus is not even on this list.
Not on the list.
Samus is not ahead of fucking Asterion from Baldur's Gate 3 or Nathan Drake from Uncharted, who I would maybe put at number 50 on this list.
Listen, I like Yakuza, the series, now known as Like a Dragon officially in the US. I don't know if Kazuma Kiryu deserves a spot on the 20 top iconic game characters of all time.
In what universe is Sackboy ahead of Crash Bandicoot? Like, Sackboy owes Crash, his life Pikachu, to Crash Bandicoot.
Ahead of Kratos. If we're talking about PlayStation icons, like, Kratos is bigger than Sackboy.
Yeah, for sure.
Sackboy is apparently bigger than Master Chief. Insane. Just an insane list. I'm sorry that I had to.
This is user generated, though, correct? Like, this is people voted on this. It wasn't
people
private.
Allegedly voted on this. It says over 4,000 video game players from around the world.
What? Who? What? Nobody saw this poll. This was posted on Android Police. That's the number of people that saw this poll.
Wow.
I'm sorry. That was too easy.
No, it's fine. I literally, you know what I'm doing after we record this podcast? Writing this week's poll.
you should ask the same question. You should add like a bunch of these characters and just be like, what is the most iconic video game character?
Yeah,
of all time?
And it's the list is the five choices I'm gonna give are Lara Croft, Sackboy, Shadowheart, or Arthur Morgan from Red Dead 2.
Definitely don't include Mario or Sonic.
Or Pikachu.
Or Pikachu.
Just truly insane. I'm sorry, but we have not focused enough on the fact that Mario is not number one.
That's fair. I mean, that is just the most insane thing I've ever seen. Even some of the other Mario characters, like Bowser,
yeah,
and Peach are more iconic than Agent 47 or Sackboy. Like, what? Like, even fucking Knuckles and Tails, Waluigi should be ahead of all of these, because obviously there's so many other characters that I can't even name right now that I'm like, I've never been so angry.
Anyway, that was all the right, last thing I used Gemini for.
I love that that was the last thing you used Gemini for.
Also, I should say, Gemini, when I asked...
What does Gemini it, think? Yeah.
So, the problem is that if you ask Gemini, give me the top 20 iconic video game characters of all time, because Gemini is tied into the web, it just gives you the BAFTA games list. So it gives you exactly what we just read. You have to change the number. If you say 19, it gives you like a unique...
That's insane. It just copies the list?
Yeah, it just copies.
You're right, it does. It just copies the list. This is like, okay, let's bring it back. Let's make this about Google again, because we're so good at this. That's why they pay us thousands of dollars every week to host the Android Police podcast.
Yeah,
because we are so good at bringing it back to the topic at hand.
Yeah.
The fact that we have no fucking idea where this information is coming from.
Right.
So I just did that. I said, what are the 20 most iconic video game characters ever? It says, here's a list of 20 iconic video games. Okay. So technically it's not saying the most iconic. It's saying, here's a list of 20 iconic video game characters.
Right.
But it's not sourcing the article. So the individual entries.
You have to hit the Google button. You have to hit the fact check button, right?
Where is the fact check
button? Isn't it at the bottom?
I don't even see it.
Hold on. I closed out of Gemini.
More.
Too late. It's the double check response button. It's the Google logo at the very bottom of the.
Oh my God. They want you to check. They want you to press the Google logo.
Yeah. And then it'll say searching on Google.
But the thing is, the sourcing is for each character. So Lara Croft, number one, links to Wikipedia. Number two, Mario, goes to Super Mario Wonder on Nintendo.com.
Yeah.
For some reason, Sonic goes to Chia.com because they want you to. Literally, oh my God, this is incredible. It goes to Chia.com because it's linking to the Sonic Chia pet that you can buy for $24.99. I'm not even making this up. You could buy a Sonic the Hedgehog Chia pet for $25, and that is the source that Gemini wants you to click on. This is unhinged. This is the most insane AI result I've ever seen in my life. And there is still, after the fact check, there is no indication that this is taken from the BAFTA list anywhere.
Yeah,
like, this is straight up plagiarism of the worst kind, because it's plagiarism of a bad source.
Yeah.
And they're still not sourcing the bad source.
Jesus Christ, it wasn't y'all. It was someone else. It was them all.
I'm wrong, by the way. I changed it to top 10 most iconic, and this was working yesterday. It was giving me fresh results yesterday. It is now... just giving me 10 of the 20 from the BAFTA list. But as you say, it's not telling me where they're coming from. It's just linking to other stuff. Yeah.
Now I changed the wording. I said, what are the most iconic video game characters ever? It now changed the results. Mm-hmm. Sorry, it changed the way that it's approaching it by saying, defining iconic can be subjective, but here are some characters that have transcended the world of video games. But it is the exact same top 10 list.
Yeah.
With different images for some reason. Now the Tomb Raider source is going to a website called zhpartners.com, and it's a 3D game character Lara Croft Tomb Raider render that you can purchase for 26 euros. And it is, let's just say, not a realistic portrayal of what a woman looks like.
Nice polygon.
Nice polygon.
Oh, really?
Oh, come on.
I should say that yesterday, when I was talking about this in a group chat, I also asked ChatGPT to give me the 20 most iconic video game characters of all time. And it gave me, here's the top 10. Mario, Link, Pikachu, Sonic, Lara Croft. Lara?
Oh, yeah, there's no Link. Oh, wait, no, Link was now.
Master Chief, Pac-Man, Donkey Kong, who was not on the BAFTA list, Samus, mm-hmm. who was not on the BAFTA list, and Solid Snake. I still think that's like,
that is a pretty decent
list. It's a much better list.
It's very Nintendo heavy, but obviously any list is going to be very Nintendo heavy.
Some other highlights: Mega Man, who I believe is not on the BAFTA list. Chun-Li and Ryu from Street Fighter.
Oh yeah, how could we forget like Mortal Kombat and yeah. Street Fighter characters?
Yeah, Kirby.
Kirby, obviously.
Yeah, it's insane. It's insane. I'm sorry, but like, in no world is Asterion and Shadowheart.
Ken and Ryu. How do we forget them?
I don't know. It's wild. I guess the voters. I guess this is how the voters just were like, who do I remember from video games that I played in the last year? That's why my top 10 includes, it's just Pokemon on my top 10 list when I voted.
Well, I suppose, I mean, there are so many other Pokemon alone that are more iconic than most of the characters on that list.
Yeah, I would say like a decent chunk of the original 151 Pokemon are more iconic than Shadowheart from Baldur's Gate 3. Correct. No disrespect to Baldur's Gate 3, good video game. I'm just saying.
We are very close to running the risk of Jules just cutting this entire segment.
If Jules cuts this segment, I
we're going to come to Boston.
I will quit the show.
we're gonna come and ask you what your top 10 iconic, most iconic video game characters are.
Number 15. Bedauerlich.
Jules can't cut this because this is the 100th Android Police episode people want. We found it. It just took a
yes,
minute.
Yes, this is it. This yeah. is the perfect balance. But like, okay, let's bring it back to the topic at hand. Let's make Jules love us again.
Yeah.
This is the product that Google wants to integrate into not, its core.
Not just
product.
Integrate. Have you pay for it? They,
have
right?
you
like,
pay
not,
for it?
Not even so much, although they already want you to pay for Gemini, but also just like SGE, which is a similar, although adjacent thing. In what world is anyone going to pay for this stuff? Like right now, in my opinion, SGE exists as a thing I ignore when I'm searching for stuff because it's just kind of in the way and I know it's not going to give me anything I want. Like the idea that Google thinks people will pay for it, you know, unless they just throw it under Google One, but I still think, again, like I don't think there's as many Google One subscribers who would fit under this, depending on what level they put it at. I guess the 99 cent or the $1.99 tiers, if they put it there, maybe, but the higher tiers, no. And at the same time, because as we just addressed, Gemini and SGE as well tend to plagiarize their sources without giving you the context of where it's pulling from, despite the fact that it's easy to figure out if you know. I'm kind of like, do it. Charge for this. It just means less people will use it. And frankly, that's I think, kind of good for the fate of the internet.
But here's the thing. Google needs to prove that the free version is valuable before they will convince anybody to charge to pay for any of its premium stuff, right? It's not like you're going to say, I got terrible results on the free version of Gemini, right. So I'm gonna pay for Gemini Advanced just in case they have better results. Chances are they will have better results. But if you're not even getting a baseline level of value from the free version, you're dismissing it outright. You're being like, all right, Google's completely off its rocker thinking we're going to pay for this when right. there are two other far better products in ChatGPT and Anthropic and probably Microsoft, because it has a vested interest in doing so, will continue to offer GPT Advanced for free, sorry, GPT-4 Turbo in its core Bing Chat or Copilot, whatever they're calling their generative AI product right now. They will subsidize this as long as they can in order to screw with Google's business model. So like the only real thing that we have to look forward to here is Google's core business is inevitably going to get disrupted because Google is terrified of disrupting its own core business, right? Nobody's competing with Google on search. That ship sailed 10, 15 years ago. But the fact that Google is
not
willing...
On the Coggy train?
Not on the Coggy train.
You haven't signed up for a paid Coggy account?
Not yet, no.
Fair enough.
Should I?
I don't know. I've been kind of thinking about it. I think it'd be like an interesting experiment.
Remember that list we were talking about with... Apple having to show like all of the different browser options
yes.
in the EU and how most of them you've never heard of. Like, I'll admit I don't know what the hell Kagi is. I thought it was like COGI, but apparently it's KAGI.
Yeah.
But like, there have been Google alternatives forever. Some of them are more privacy centric. Some of them are more, they try to give you more personalized results. There's always an angle. But at the end of the day, like, nobody changes. There are some people who are like, yeah, I use DuckDuckGo, or, you know, I use Arc Search or whatever.
Yeah. It's all the Linux users. Like, it's the same thing.
Yeah. Oh, did you hear about this? I mean, I don't know nearly enough about it to talk authoritatively, but the backdoor that was being inserted into this Linux utility over the course of 3 years that some Microsoft engineer just randomly found.
No.
Oh, the story is wild. You have to read about it. There's been some really good reporting on it so far.
Yeah, I have the Intercept piece up. I'm gonna read this after.
Yeah, it's crazy. Like, this backdoor was slowly being added to an open source utility that, like, lots of Linux distributions preload and lots of users use on a regular basis. It's called XYUtil or something.
XZUtil. Yeah.
XZUtil. And yeah, just like absolutely wild that somebody just found this because they saw that the SSH responses were taking slightly longer than normal. And you're like, how do you just, you're like, oh, this SSH response should have taken 3 milliseconds, but it took 8. Like, something's not right. And then from there, you just go back and like uncover this conspiracy that has taken place over the last 3 years where this person has slowly messed with the code of a bunch of open source projects in order to create this backdoor into Linux that like nobody otherwise would have found. Like, just, it's devious and brilliant and so interesting to read up about how this stuff works. Because as a non-developer, I don't really understand it, but there's the human element to it of like, is it a state actor? Is it a person doing it for their own sort of malicious gains? Is it a 14-year-old just like messing with people for the hell of it? Like, who knows? That's the stuff that I find really fascinating.
Yeah, I can't believe I missed this. I'm reading this after this show.
It's okay. You're reading it during. You're like, You go ahead and talk. All right, let's talk about another way that Google pissed people off this week. So Google Podcast died ostensibly, but is not actually dead. It was apparently supposed to die on April 2nd in the US, but didn't. And then we have until June 24th in the EU and other countries. But you can still use Google Podcasts on the web and on your phone if you really want to. Then there's all this secondary reporting about how annoyed people are that podcasts are still terrible inside YouTube Music. So the fact that Google is killing yet another product that, like, admittedly not a lot of people used, but was a decent standalone solution with like a good native app and a web portal, and Google saying that, oh, we really want to invest in podcasting and YouTube Music. Most people in the Google ecosystem listen to podcasts in YouTube, right? So it makes sense to integrate it into YouTube Music, but that doesn't really make sense because YouTube Music is a completely different product to YouTube. It is monetized completely differently. So if Google had been like, yeah, we'll set up an AdSense for podcasts in the same way that they do on YouTube, that would be one thing. And that's an argument that David Pierce made at The Verge, which he wrote very cogently about this. And I agree. I think it is another reason not to trust Google. And his piece was basically like, this is your fault. Whether or not you did this because people weren't using your app and you think that people will want to listen to podcasts in YouTube, the fact that you created a standalone Google Podcast experience only to kill it like 3 years later is another example of how the company cannot stick to one path and has no internal coherence whatsoever. And yeah, they absolutely deserve all of the wrath that they're getting about this. Because it's really like, it's just one more in a long line of reasons not to trust Google.
Yeah, I mean, beyond the really, really big services, right? So like Gmail, I guess Chrome as an application, YouTube in general. I don't know if I would file YouTube Music under that, but YouTube in general. That level of application, do we have any faith that anything else, at Calendar, I guess maybe, but like, do we have any faith that anything else is safe from Google just deciding one day that it's bored with it and it would either wants to close it or wants to move it into a different thing that kind of works as a transition, but also not really. I know ZKD at the site is still unable to export his podcast from Google Podcasts and was literally just saying that he is like, I guess I'm just going to move to a standalone app. I don't know what else to do. I don't know. Like, I can't in good faith recommend. Again, we're a month out from I/O, right? Like, they're going to announce lots of new AI stuff, but also certainly just other new features, maybe new applications. Am I going to walk out of I/O talking to the people in my life, not the readers of AP, but like just whatever, normal people, and be like, you really need to go try out this new Google app. It's going to be here forever and you should put your faith in it. Like, no, that's gone. It's been gone, right? Like, for a lot of people, Stadia was the last straw. I would be surprised if Google Podcasts was the last straw for anybody in particular, but it is certainly just another example of like, you cannot trust this company to keep things around versus their closest competitor in Apple, where yes, Apple shuts down features that people don't use, but certainly at a much slower clip than Google, right? Like, I can try to sit here and think of examples off the top of my head that Apple has killed, and I'm sure I would come up with 5 or 6, but with Google, it's like, you know, you could think of 20 right now.
Are you saying Laura Croft or Lara Croft?
Like, if I snap my fingers, right? Like, it's a problem.
You know, so it's really interesting. I was trying to think of a Google service or app that has been built in the last 5 years that I use on a regular basis.
Right.
And I cannot. However, if I audit Google's services, I take for granted just how many of them I still use on a regular, on a daily basis, right? So if you look at the, if you go to google.com, you click on the 9 dots in the top right, and you kind of go through all the Google apps that it gives you. Google Search, obviously, I use that dozens of times a day. Google Maps, I use it all the time. That is my default mapping app, even on an iPhone. YouTube, I open that probably 10 times a day. Google Play, when I'm on an Android phone, obviously, I use that. Google News, I don't often use Google News, but it's there, and I actually don't mind it very much. I like it better than Apple News.
Oh, for
Gmail,
sure.
Obviously, like that is my number one. I use that probably more than Search. Meet, I like Meet better than any other teleconferencing app, right? Like,
agreed.
I don't know how this happened, but Google Meet is the only Google product that I've used more in the last 3 years that I think has improved significantly since like the days of the early pandemic. Like, if you remember the breakdown, there was like Zoom and WebEx and Teams, right? And Meet. I would pick Meet over any of those in a heartbeat.
Google Meet, because Google Meet has been a couple things, right? But if we take it as the application that was essentially the merging of Meet, the business app, with Duo, the consumer app, that happened in I guess that never really happened, but it basically happened, right? They like killed Duo. Does that make Meet basically the newest application you're using? It's not new, but is it the newest Google service you like regularly use? It launched as the business version in 2017.
Yes, it is, but I don't consider Duo to be a part of this, right?
Yeah,
Duo was fine.
Duo was an example of like one of the apps that I tried to get people to use and it worked, but like it's not there now. So like I don't know.
But you might still have 3 Meet apps on your Android phone, depending on how old your Android version is.
Yeah.
But I think like as a core enterprise product, Meet has just only gotten better and done so in a really consistent and often surprising way. Like what you'll find is that you'll be in a call and all of a sudden it will just be better. And you'll be like, oh, they'll be like, we improved background noise suppression. And then you'll have somebody hammering away on your roof and the people on your call can't hear anything. And you're like, yeah, background audio suppression, much better. Or the blurring, like the fact that Google's blur is just so much better at finding my outline.
It's the only good one. Every other Teams, terrible.
Awful.
Zoom, terrible. Like they're all bad.
I'm bald. So with Zoom, it looks hilarious. I look like an egg. Like there's no transition from hard to soft.
Yeah, Google does a good job just kind of finding the edge, like softening the edges so that it doesn't look like you're popping out of the background.
Yeah, it's weird how good it is. Google Chat, like I stopped using chat once they moved away from Hangouts a couple years ago. My wife and I used Hangouts all the time because it was simple and cross-platform and it just worked. After Google Chat, technically, even though it's still simple and cross-platform and just works, I'm like, I don't trust this to be here in 5 years. I'm moving to WhatsApp. And I actually think that was a really good decision. So that's another one where I'm just like, I don't trust you well enough to continue with this product. Then there's like the GApp stuff, like Drive, Docs, Sheets, Slides.
Yeah. Can I show you what I think
use those all the time.
I have no evidence of this, but like there's something in my gut where I'm like, if you fast forwarded 3 years, Google Keep is dead. I don't know what it is. I'm just like, they're going to replace it with something. They're going to make some AI-based notes app.
They're going to do something with like Google Tasks.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. It's like Google Keep is too general to be specific. Like, I don't know. I agree with you.
I like Keep a lot. I use it all the time. It's great as someone who bounces between a lot of different devices. I can feel that like it's going to, and I've had it since I was in college. Like, I probably have 10 years of notes now, right? Like, I don't remember how long Keep's been around, but it's been about a decade. I just can feel that they're going to be like, they're going to get bored with it. They're going to be like, this isn't AI enough. I can feel it.
Oh, but no. What they're going to do is they're going to infect Keep with AI, which I think they're already doing.
I don't want that.
And then once they realize that that's a bad idea, there's going to be so much pushback. They're going to be like, well, we're just going to kill it.
Photos is another one I use all the time.
Let's keep going through the list. So calendar, yeah, I mean, that's, I use that every day. Translate, I use that a fair amount. It's by default.
Yeah.
Photos is probably one of my favorite services ever. Like, it's just so good that I can't imagine using anything else.
Google Photos is the most it just works application that Google might have, besides Meet, maybe.
Correct. Yeah. That's exactly it. Like, you don't have to use any of the editing features.
Yeah.
Nothing.
Yeah.
Although I will. Okay. So actually, here's a gripe I have with Photos. I was in Mexico. My wife wanted a whole bunch of photos from Google Photos that I'd taken on my phone. Mm-hmm. I just shared the photos that I took with her. And on her phone, she could not figure out how to download those photos.
Okay.
Right? You can add them to your library or whatever, but like there was just some UX black hole that we could just not figure out how to get around. They would end up in a shared folder somewhere. She could technically try to save them individually to her library and then download them from the library to her phone, but we couldn't get past the point of being able to save them to the library. And like, that process, as powerful as the auto sharing feature is for Google Photos, is still super clunky.
Yeah.
But the core product is excellent, I will say. Okay. Then there's My Ad Center. Doesn't that look like a poop? It absolutely looks like a poop. I'd never seen this before.
I've also never seen it before.
This is a poop. I don't know why this is a thing, but Google, you have to change that logo. It's just a colorful poop. All right, moving on. Then there's like Google Shopping, which I never use.
No.
And then there's like all the other ones that we sort of use sometimes. Like
Blogger is under this.
Blogger is still here. Apparently, you can still create a Blogger account. Google Books, like I never use Google Books.
Yeah.
Google Classroom, which is a huge, huge product for schools. Like, I don't think we can underestimate how many schools rely on Classroom, but it's a big deal. Jamboard, I think Google's closing Jamboard, if I'm not mistaken.
I believe so.
Next year.
Yeah.
Arts and Culture. I remember when that meme thing happened. Remember you could like generate an image, like you could take a photo and it would like generate a photo based on a type of art.
Yeah.
That was a thing a couple of years ago. Then there's a bunch of others like Travel, Forms, Password Manager, which we just had like an insane article about why people should move away from the Google Password Manager.
Yeah.
And everybody read that. It was like our most popular post of the week. So anyway, the reason I bring this up is because we complain all the time about Google killing apps or Google killing services. But like the reality is that the core services, we still use them all the time.
Right.
And it's just kind of a weird feeling. you know?
Yeah.
It's like, I never think that Google is going to close Gmail or Photos or whatever, but like, there are a few here that I just don't trust. And the second I don't trust it, even 1%, I don't use it.
Well, so when you look at this grid that we were going off of, right, there's, you can rearrange them, the icons as you see fit. And I don't think I ever have. I'm pretty sure I have mine in the default order. And at a certain point, there is a line break, right? There is a space where it goes from your, like, quote-unquote main applications, your search, your YouTube, your maps, and dives into books, shopping, blogger, finance. That's what I have there, right? Like,
right.
And it feels like anything under that line is, like, that's what's not safe. Like, if Google decided that the application goes under that line in the default sort, like, before you organize your own things, like, Fi, Google Fi, not safe, which I assume is not on your list.
It's not on mine, yeah.
But Google Fi, not safe. Travel, not safe. Arts and culture, not safe. Contacts, probably safe. I don't know why that's under the line for me. But stuff like that, like a lot of this stuff is like, you start being like, if they killed it, I wouldn't be surprised.
Interesting. Gemini, not here.
Not here. Not yet.
Not here. So... I mean, I think that was a good digression, because going back to this Google podcast thing, it does not surprise me that it's dying. It also doesn't surprise me that this, it just felt inevitable.
Yeah.
And it's just yet another reason why people don't trust Google.
Yeah.
Okay. Speaking of not trusting Google, this is a quick one, but some Pixel owners are experiencing network issues after the March 2024 update. Will, specifically on the Pixel 7 and 8.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem super widespread. You said you haven't had this problem yet, but we've gotten a bunch of tips from people either telling us directly or linking to community posts saying that this is a bigger problem than it appears. Not a whole lot to say about it other than Google seems to do this every year or so.
After we recorded the podcast last week, like literally, like we recorded in the morning on Thursday, and Thursday afternoon I wrote this piece. I wrote about how, based on our conversation on you pitching me, that the reason the Pixel 9 pricing idea in my head didn't make sense was because I wasn't raising the price up to $1,200. And I wrote a piece about how I don't think the Pixel is in a space where it can go up to that amount of money and not face more criticism from some of the bugs that I think are easier to ignore at cheaper prices. And this is like exactly what I was talking about of like, I'm not saying $1,000 Pixel 8 Pro is cheap, but maybe the $700 Pixel 8 is, right? Or whatever, or like even going back to the Pixel 7 series, it is a little bit easier to ignore these issues when you are paying less than the competitors' phones, right? Like the Pixel 7, Pixel 8, they're cheaper than the S23, the S24. If that's not true anymore come this fall, and in a year, we're still seeing these issues because of Tensor and because of Google's own Android update policy and how buggy a lot of their updates can be, that's a problem. And I think it's going to be, people are going to be harsher on these phones, specifically critics are going to be harsher on these phones than they are right now, because it's easier to forgive this stuff when you kind of had it built into your head that you were getting a compromised experience for the money that you were paying.
I agree with you in theory. I don't think it matters, because there's a reality part of it, which is like post-release maintenance and stuff like that. And then there's the marketing side of it, where Google has to present this product to a particular user base.
Right.
And it needs to tell people, based on its price, that it is able to compete with those other products. Right. I don't necessarily think it'll be $1,300 or $1,200, but if they're going for a big pro and bigger pro this year, then I don't know. I just think the biggest phone will need to be the more expensive.
I agree with you there. And you said as much last week, I think. I think, and let me expand this a little bit further. I think my issue is that, and this is what I wrote about, Google has not proven that its phones are worth the same dollar amount as Samsung phones or Apple's phones. And not to say Samsung's phones are flawless. We have a new story this week that I put in here just kind of as context about like fingerprint sensor issues on the S23 and Samsung's latest update. It happens, and Apple rolls out bad updates too. But this is like a known problem with Pixels of like every two or three months, regardless of the hardware, bugged updates roll out to these phones and are halted way too late and take forever to get fixed. I mean, like, let's be clear. We wrote about this March 2024 update after the April update had already rolled out, and the April update does not fix this stuff. So, like, bare minimum, unless Google does a mid-month hotfix, which they don't usually do, people are stuck with these network issues until May at the earliest.
Yeah. Yeah, I think Google will just say that it's only affecting a very small number of people, and those people are disproportionately
loud. Small number of Pixel, the small number is everyone who's bought a Pixel, because not a lot of people buy them. I'm kidding.
Yeah,
I'm
kidding. Exactly.
Most Pixel owners listen to the show, though. So.
Yes, all eight of you. Dozens of us. I think I agree with you. In theory, I don't think they're the same argument, though. So I think
it just ties into it. That's all.
It ties into the fact that if you're an existing Pixel owner and you go through this, are you going to upgrade?
No. Well, yeah, to a S25.
Yeah. But if you do decide to upgrade to a Pixel, or like you were on a Pixel 7 and you're looking forward to the Pixel 9, like, will this change your mind at all? Would you be like, I just don't want to deal with this shit. I'm going to go to a Samsung.
I think we've had almost 3 years in the Tensor era of Pixel, and this is still happening. Right. And I think that there is a stink on the Pixel brand because of this, because it's still happening.
I mean, the stink is on the Pixel brand, but it's in particular on the Tensor chip. It's on the Samsung modem that they've used for 3 years in a row. And it speaks to, like, the best decision Apple ever made was renewing its contract with Qualcomm.
100%.
Whether Apple likes to acknowledge it or not, and it doesn't. Apple bought Intel's modem business with the intention of canceling its contract with Qualcomm and integrating its own modems, and that failed again and again and again, to the point where the rumors have it now that it's only coming in like 2026. But Qualcomm is the best third-party provider of modems, period. Like, we know this. It powers basically every other Android phone on the planet, and it's only gotten better, right? If 100%. Google really wanted to, they could have disconnected the modem portion. I mean, again, I'm not a chip designer. I don't know how difficult this would have been, but we have seen it in the past where even like Apple makes every other basically part of the A series chip except for the modem and the radios and the antenna and things like that, the amplifiers. It's possible. And if Google wanted to give users the best modem experience, it would build the G series chip built with basically a modified Exynos processor on a Samsung node with a Qualcomm baseband solution. It would be expensive. It would be bigger. It would probably be hotter, but it would be a better experience.
I dream about a Snapdragon 8 Gen 3 powered Pixel 8 pretty much every night when I go to bed. Not that that's taking
it
one step.
Isn't that wild?
Can you imagine?
Like, isn't that wild that it now looks in retrospect like the Tensor project was a mistake?
Yeah. Yeah.
Just like the things that Google is selling access to Gemini Nano to Samsung and the Qualcomm powered Snapdragon Gen 3, whatever, 8 Gen 3 is utilizing Gemini Nano. Mm-hmm. That whole argument undermines the need for Tensor in the first place.
Well, yeah, the whole point about Tensor was that we need it to power all the AI stuff. And like, it is very obvious that that is. In fact, like, the small S24 has Gemini Nano before the Pixel 8. Like, it's just like, if it's not an active lie, it was certainly an exaggeration of what Google needed. You know, maybe it was true with the Pixel 6 series, right? Like, maybe Qualcomm's own Tensor was not quite there to be able to run stuff like Magic Eraser, but it is now. Like, Qualcomm has caught up, in my opinion, on the AI front with their latest chips, and arguably I would say the Snapdragon 8 Gen 2 as well. Like, those chips can do all of the AI stuff you would need them to do, and there's evidence of that. And the result of the Tensor project is that the Pixel series is kind of worse for wear.
So the next thing Google's going to kill is the Tensor project.
I'd be fine with that. You know what? Like, I'm kind of okay. Tensor G3 is the best Tensor chip Google has released. I don't think there's any debate about that. It still gets hot sometimes for no reason. It still sometimes just has random battery drain. all stuff that I have not seen on the last couple generations of Qualcomm chips. So, like, I would be fine with that.
So that's all the Google complaining for today.
Yeah.
I want to complain a little bit about OnePlus now, very, very quickly.
Yeah.
So OnePlus, I received a press release about this, so I know it's official. They have entered their AI phase. They released a version of Magic Eraser for its phones that is much worse than Magic Eraser, which is available for its phones if you use Google Photos. So that's interesting. Mind you, you have to have a Google One subscription, but a lot of people do. So what is the deal here?
I think a photo eraser is kind of like a good place for OnePlus to kind of get its feet wet with AI stuff, right? Like they're saying they're using their own LLM for this. This is all stuff that they built behind the scenes. And I think also was already on the Chinese OnePlus 12 when they added a couple AI features to ColorOS a couple months ago, but this is the first time it's going global over the next like few weeks, basically. My issue with it is that, like, as you say, like, if you're a Google One subscriber, you can already use Magic Eraser on any phone, including the iPhone. And then we've only seen one example of what OnePlus's AI eraser looks like, and it's like a pretty bad one. If you look at our coverage of it, I wrote up this blog post on it. They chose like a terrible photo to do this with. And maybe they did this on purpose to try to show just how advanced their algorithms are. But it's this photo of a bride and a groom at a wedding. The groom is holding flowers for some reason. I don't know why he got them, but congratulations to him. And there's a lot of glitter in the air, which is, I guess, the difficult thing to erase. And what they did was they erased the wedding goers off screen, right? So like people who have their hands in the shot, but are not like in the shot. I don't know why you would want to erase the people you invited to your wedding, but I guess maybe if you're distracted by the fact that they're there, that's fine. I'm not going to think too hard about it. The issue is that, like, basically all of the edits they did are, like, really noticeable. So, like, they cut out a couple hands, but because of the glitter, the algorithm they're using did not completely replicate where the glitter would be in the shot. So it just leaves an outline of the clapping hands where you can see that there's, like, a ghost that is not there. On the left side of the image, behind the groom, there's like a piece of the building that, instead of just following the pattern, it just creates like a gray blob to fill in the space. It looks really bad. There's a couple other smaller things, of like the groom's jacket looks weird and a piece of the bride's sleeve. But in general, I think it's like a really bad first impression of this thing that they want us to be excited about, that they want OnePlus users to be excited about. I would assume that this probably works better in practice with a photo that is not as difficult as one filled with glitter. But yeah, I looked at this week and I was like, this is not good, guys. This looks pretty bad.
I looked at the result and I was trying to understand, like, why is it so hard for other companies, smaller companies, to make this feature even remotely usable?
Yeah.
And I just think it's because none of it is their own technology, right? Like, they're integrating it. They're likely using a third-party API. Mm-hmm. They don't have control over the levers that a Google or an Apple would. And it's one of those things where I think it will...
There it is. Once a show. It wouldn't be a 100th episode without Google...
Coming in and making her opinion known. Yeah, it's just like, I feel like they're never going to be able to offer as good an experience because they don't own the tech. They don't have the resources. So they're offering this as a turnkey solution to one, so whoever's providing this, whether, you know, it's some like third party company that's offering its services. I cannot imagine OnePlus itself is owning this. Whether it's the model itself that they're using to that they're licensing out and then just building the UX around it, or if they're actually just outsourcing the entire stack to a third party. But it just reinforces the state of big tech, right? That the companies like Google, really ChatGPT or OpenAI is one of the few companies that I can recall in recent memory that has like pervaded mainstream culture, created a system and a network and a set of APIs and a set of hooks that other bigger companies are plugging into, right? It's Microsoft, the tech giant, plugging into OpenAI, not the other way around. And it's not like OpenAI is just some tiny little startup that was bootstrapped and came out of nowhere. I mean, nobody knew who it was because it was in stealth mode for so long, but it was like Sam Altman and Elon Musk are not some unknown entrepreneurs, right? But it is interesting that like that is really one of the few examples that I can think of where disruption happened outside of the big five. You know, it wasn't Apple, Google, Microsoft, Amazon, Meta. Anyway, so yeah, I think like it's going to be interesting to see how kind of the smaller parts of AI play out. But this is an example of OnePlus being like, we have to offer this feature. You know, it's also possible that Qualcomm is powering this, right? Because Qualcomm builds this into the Snapdragon chip.
Inside baseball, but like half of attending a Snapdragon summit is just, these days, is just seeing AI demos that are not actually like, they'll never, at least under Qualcomm's branding, ship on a phone, but like they might work with a Samsung or whatever to get that stuff up and running. Yeah.
Yeah, but more inside baseball is that like you go to the event and they show you a reference phone with a bunch of reference apps.
Yeah.
And those are apps that have been built to take advantage. So they have like very basic APIs that are leveraging the hardware powers of the upcoming device. And then they build apps that show a UX that allow you to experience the APIs that are plugging into the hardware, right? So it's like Qualcomm is increasingly owning the vertical stack right up until the point that it sells that solution to a client like a OnePlus or a Xiaomi. But it's unclear to me whether Xiaomi or OnePlus or Vivo or Oppo or any of the other kind of Android brands are just leveraging the hardware acceleration from Qualcomm and like going in another direction for the software solution, or if they're just being like, yeah, I'll just take it all. I'll just take the default. I'll pay you a slightly higher licensing fee for the actual chip. Unclear up here. But anyway, as you've made very apparent, the results are underwhelming to say the least.
Yeah, go look at them. Obviously, God, the longer I look at it, I actually didn't realize that it almost like moves some of the glitter around a little bit too. It looks like some of it's like more cut off. Like, I don't know. There's very, very weird things going on in this image that I would say makes it look particularly noticeable as opposed to something even like Magic Eraser, let alone doing it, you know, on your own in Photoshop. But go look at that on the website.
I will also acknowledge, though, that doing this even remotely well is really hard.
True. Yeah.
Okay. What else? I guess the last thing is Android 15 is coming. We might get the next beta or the first beta next week. So that will be interesting. Android 15 will likely have a bunch of new features. Michelle Rahman is always poking into the developer previews and finding new things that are coming up. The betas will unlikely have many of these features user facing, but they'll have more things under the hood that we can find. But one thing that might be cool is an improved desktop mode. And you and I were talking about this before the show. You don't really think anybody wants a new desktop mode because nobody really uses their Android phone as a desktop or tablet as a desktop. But like,
well, I just struggle to see when I'm going to, the point I was making is that you have to have a very specific setup to get use out of something like DeX, which I would say is the most successful desktop mode we've seen yet. The issue is that like, I've just, as I said to you in the pre-show, I've never sat down in front of a computer monitor and a keyboard and a mouse and not had some kind of computer nearby that can plug into those things. Like, I just don't know where that exists. I am sure there are, like, plenty of examples of, like, someone has a foldable, and they have a portable 15-inch display, and that's their laptop, is the foldable. And when they're traveling in a hotel room, they plug the phone into the foldable, or the foldable into the display, and they can use DeX. But, like, it does feel incredibly niche, no matter how you think about it.
Yeah, I agree. I think there was a time in sort of the mid 2010s when we thought that tablets would be the new laptop.
Yeah.
And then you would just use your tablet, or like you could make your tablet into a computer and that would be that. But as we've seen with DeX, like that actually never really worked out that well. And I think the main persistent issue in 2024, as it was in 2014, is the quality of Android apps on in like a windowed environment, or having to use a mouse and keyboard to control an Android app, not enough of those apps resize well and have enough features that rival their native counterparts. And then there's also the side of like, so many of the apps that we use in desktop are just inside of a browser, and the browsers that you can download on a phone are never going to be as fully featured as they are on a desktop. So you can use Chrome, but your Chrome experience will always be worse than if you just used your laptop. So for me, it's like, I agree with you in theory. I just think there are some people who don't want to carry two things, and having a big phone or a tablet that can stand in for a laptop, and then you can just, I don't know. There must be somebody out there who wants this. Otherwise, Google wouldn't continue working on it.
For sure. And I'm not saying it. I can't envision it being useful. I mean, I just came up with an idea of where it would fit in, but I just, you know, I can't see it fitting into my life. But I would love to be proven wrong, kind of. Like, there is, like, you know, this is kind of a dead idea, but the dream of, like, the one device that becomes everything was maybe more popular of a concept 10 years ago, right? Like those Asus phones that fit like a cassette into tablets, and then you like close it and now it's a tablet.
Oh yeah.
And, like, I always liked that idea. Like, I don't, and it didn't really go anywhere. Yeah, the earliest
not Zenfone. The pad phone?
Yeah, it was the pad phone. There was an Asus pad phone. Yeah, the pad phone fit into a 10-inch tablet dock.
Man, like, those were the days.
That's what I'm like, even if it, you know, it didn't really go anywhere, but like, it was a cool idea of like how this thing becomes this thing. And, you know, I'm kind of into that dream. I just, maybe I need to see a demo from someone smarter than me on like how my life will be changed by my Pixel 8 Pro powering everything I do in a working day, as opposed to the laptop that is sitting in front of me on a mount plugged into a monitor and a keyboard and a mouse. Although also, you know, back to what we were saying, I'm not sure I would want to work on a Tensor powered device all day. So,
yeah, I think that's more the issue here.
Yeah, exactly.
Especially if you don't want to carry like a big ass battery everywhere you go, or just plug the thing in.
Yeah. I need to get one of those cooling pads.
Oh my God. Just get a gaming phone in that case. Just like buy the ROG phone. Like, that's, if that's what you're going for. I'm sure the desktop mode on the ROG Phone 8 is just like full of LEDs. Okay. I have here, Will admits to Daniel that the Lost finale is garbage as our final point of the day.
The second you said
is
admits,
that correct?
I'm like, I did not write admits. I believe I wrote, and this is truly the first thing I added to the show notes, Will roast Daniel for 10 minutes on how good the Lost finale is, which I rewatched with Maddie over the weekend. First time I've done a rewatch of that entire show ever. We did it over the last like year.
How many episodes is it? It was six seasons, 22 episodes?
120-ish.
Can you imagine? Like, just before we talk about this finale, yeah, which was terrible, just think about the number of shows or episodes in a season,
yeah,
that used to be expected of a network television show.
I know. I miss it.
You know?
I miss it.
24 episodes. Like, the show 24,
yeah,
literally was built around the idea that you could have 24 episodes in a season.
And you know what? It would end in May, and it'd be right back on the air in September. Imagine that.
So much work. So much work.
First of all, nailed it. 121 episodes of Lost. I was one off, so I nailed that. Secondly, Maddie and I talked about how this show is like, you know, it could never work in the streaming era because the Netflix reboot of Lost is 8 episodes a season with 18 months between seasons. And like, no one watches the second season because everyone forgets about it. And also, like, you're not even to the hatch by the end of season 3 or whatever. Or you don't get any of the character work, which is my whole argument, is that the show Lost is not. I think Lost works a lot better as a thing you can watch together and not obsessed over every little piece of theory that you would have multiple Lost blogs writing about. And look, I was young when this, like, the show finished when I was in 10th grade, I think, right? But I watched it, and I remember, at least over the last like 2 or 3 seasons of the show, like, I was on those Lost blogs. I was reading those theories, and it still worked for me when I was a kid. And if anything, it worked harder for me this time because the concept, spoilers for Lost, which finished 14 years ago, so stop listening if you want to rewatch Lost, which you should. The ending of Lost, where it is revealed that these people essentially built a purgatory in which they could meet each other and enter the afterlife together, the re-meet the people that like changed their lives and these connections they built, hit me pretty hard as a 28-year-old, emotionally speaking. I think Lost is a really successful show emotionally, and frankly, I'm struggling to think of questions I care about at the end of it that it leaves really unanswered. Like, I kind of get everything, and I think when you're watching it not quite obsessed over the clues and you know where it's going, it is easier to be like, I don't care about... the polar bears are answered in a DVD featurette, but I'm going to use the polar bears as the example. I don't care about the polar bears. Like, it's just an interesting thing on the island. Like, it doesn't need an explanation. That's my read.
Yeah, I think that is a fair, yet, like, if you're looking at it from a optimistic perspective or or a generous perspective, then that's valid. I would say when you have 92 hours of television in which to answer some questions, and most of those questions, or many of those questions, remain unsatisfying, if not unanswered. I'm not saying they're not unanswered, but unsatisfyingly answered. There is ample reason to gripe with some of the decisions they made.
I think that's fair.
Especially since they admitted that they had no idea where the show would end when it began, right?
Well, that's J.J. Abrams' whole thing. I'm aware he's not the showrunner on it, but he is certainly a creative in the first season and with the pilot specifically. He didn't know where the sequel trilogy would end either, and we saw how that ended up.
There's this line in Mad Men that I love where one of the women that he is having an affair with, I think it's in season one or two, she says, like, you're a man who only likes the beginning of things.
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, I'm paraphrasing, but it's like that always struck me with J.J. Abrams. Like, J.J. Abrams gets very excited, or at least this is how he used to be, like 20 years ago when he was probably more energetic and had the ability to juggle 8 different projects. It just felt like he got really excited about things and then just left them in chaos for people to pick up the pieces.
Right.
This happened with Alias too. And I don't know if I could ever, I don't know if I'll ever forgive J.J. Abrams for the way that he destroyed Alias, because it was such a good show in the first 2 seasons. And then it just completely disintegrated after that. And as far as I remember, J.J. Abrams did Lost right after he did Alias.
Yeah, they're back to back, basically.
So I don't know. I mean, that's kind of where I come from. Like, I think Lost was super ambitious. It was one of the more expensive network shows ever made.
Oh, absolutely.
I think what's potentially more interesting about that original question of, like, is there would there be the ability to create 121 episodes of 44-minute television today? And the answer is probably not, right? There's no appetite for it. But also, with the rise again of ad-supported streaming, I actually think there might be a market for it, because, like, the business model of shows getting funded partially through like low interest rate VC money and subscription revenue clearly wasn't enough, because most companies outside of Netflix lost money on their streaming endeavors. But the fact that Netflix is now making more money and Disney Plus is making more money and Paramount and all these companies are looking to add advertising revenue back into the streaming model, I think it might accelerate this kind of more ambitious projects that we could get. I mean, I don't know if that'll ever happen again, because I just don't think people have the appetite anymore in like the world of TikTok for 22 episode seasons, but the budgets might be there again, because that's how you make the money back. Advertising.
I mean, I think it's there, though. Look at Suits being the most popular show on Netflix last year. Like, there are reasons that these half serialized, half case of the week television shows, like, are so successful on streaming, right? Like, constantly outperform, like, original content is because it's like people want lots of things to be able to binge. They don't want like, oh, I finished the 8 episodes in a weekend, I guess that's it for that. And then on the other side, like, I think it would be good for Hollywood to get back to this sort of these sort of longer seasons, because like you are less likely to lose your audience if you are constantly giving them new things, right? So if you release 22 episodes of television from September, it does, I guess it doesn't have to follow the traditional broadcast television schedule, but if you release from September to May 22 episodes of television with breaks for the holidays and just random weeks in between, right? Like when you get back to it, you have another season ready just a few months later, right? Like those people are with you and ready to follow the story into the next chapter rather than waiting 18 to 24 months. I mean, God, like, not to become too much of an entertainment show, but like we were finishing Lost as the news broke about season 3 of Euphoria being indefinitely delayed into a 2025 filming date. And it leaked that they were saying they're going to shoot Euphoria season 3, which, reminder, Euphoria season 2, a mess of television, finished airing over 2 years ago. That show wrapped in February of 2022. So we're that far out. They need more time with the scripts. They're still not ready. And they're going to shoot six episodes over, I think it was like 25 weeks. It was an episode a month of shooting. And it's like, that is unsustainable. That is a ridiculous amount of time for six episodes of television that like will probably be bad. And then you look at Lost and like, let's put like your thoughts on the finale aside. Like when I was going through what people were writing about Lost in 2010, as the show was ending, I forgot that there were script pages leaked and shooting casting calls leaked from the final episode of Lost. And they had a shooting list of some of the stuff from the finale, of the scenes from the finale. They were shooting that in April. It aired in May. Like they were like turning the stuff around, and Lost looks great. It looks more expensive than most streaming shows today, primarily because they were shooting on location, but also just like they had people who knew how to like light a scene, which is not true for a lot of streaming entertainment. So like on the behind the scenes thing, I think it is time for Hollywood to go back to this sort of thing. And like credit where credit's due, The Bear is shorter seasons for sure. But at the same time, they released like a clip from season 3 of The Bear this week that is set to return in June for like, I think, the third June in a row. A slower production team behind The Bear would have that thing that would be 18 months between seasons. And at least they're doing a yearly release. Like that is not true for a lot of Netflix shows where they just disappear. As far as creatively on Lost, to answer what you said about that, I agree with you that I think a lot of the answers are disappointing. And I think that it's weird to me that so many people simultaneously feel that Lost didn't answer enough and find the answers that Lost did provide uninteresting because it's or unsatisfying, because like answers are always going to be less interesting than questions, except for what was in the hatch, because Desmond is one of the best characters in Lost. And so Desmond being in the hatch rules. Two thumbs up. The Lost finale made me cry.
Okay. I mean, I could counter what you're saying for the next hour. I will say that is not what I want to do, because It is not in my heart to deny anybody or argue with anybody.
But let's set aside how you feel about Lost, because me and AP's editor-in-chief James Peckham are going to team up and yell at you in 2 weeks when we're all together. Do you see what I mean about the creative aspect, right? Of like in terms of people.
No, I don't. I think
not Lost.
No, I don't. Like, I think longer seasons is a bad idea, not a good idea. I think the reason it stopped is not just because advertising revenue slowed down. I think it's because part of it is just that they weren't able to take for granted that people would show up week after week, right? Nielsen was able to track viewer stats, and they knew exactly who was watching every week and how many people, and like 25 million people a week were showing up to ABC to watch Lost. And it was just like we'll never get back to the destination.
The culture, what's the word I'm looking for?
Like day and date watching. Yeah. that's not going to happen ever again.
Everything is niche now, right? Like, there is no one show everyone's watching, right? Like, my Twitter feed when the Succession finale aired was filled with people talking about Succession. That show did not have actually that many viewers. You know what I mean? Like, stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah, but I just think it's more important to say that, like, yes, the infrastructure's not there anymore, but it's also when you're expected to write 24 episodes or 22 episodes a year of television, either your writer's room is enormous and there's not as much coherence. And I mean, this was true. There were a few shows that I would watch over the, like, when, as I grew up, like, you can point to some of the most iconic shows ever, like The Simpsons, some of my favorites, like Buffy the Vampire Slayer, where you could identify the better writing week over week because people were writing in a vacuum. Yes, there was a writer's room and they were sharing ideas, but if you had to get 24 scripts finished and submitted, you weren't collaborating as closely as you would like in that room, right? You were taking it home, writing it. I mean, maybe it was going through a couple of rounds of vetting, but the fact that, like, Taylor Sheridan says that he writes and or oversees every script for every show he runs today is bananas. Like, this guy
it's
probably
also unsustainable,
doesn't sleep.
Though.
It's not sustainable,
like,
but
that's why Yellowstone, I mean, that's not all the reasons. That's part of why Yellowstone hasn't come back after it aired season 5, part 1. The other reason is Kevin Costner is insane.
But the thing is, like, you look at The Bear, or you look at one of the more, I mean, God forbid, like Game of Thrones between seasons 1 and 6, there was a consistency to the production, to the writing, to the direction, because you had one person kind of, or a few core people overseeing the entire process. And that wasn't the case during the network era because it was too distributed. There was too many people doing too many things. It just felt ramshackle. I'll point to season 7 of Buffy, right? Like, I think that was a turning point for the show where it was very obvious the writing dropped in quality significantly. You can point to season 11 of The Simpsons, just straight up. Like, seasons 1 through 10 were great, and then the writing quality dropped.
Is this when they go to New York in, like, the first episode? I remember when I was doing my rewatch, I watched the episode where they go to New York, and I was like, ah, shit, I hit it. I hit the spot where I don't like this.
Yeah. Exactly. I mean, like, yeah. you can point, it's streaming has allowed for kind of smaller, more intimate productions. 8 episodes is more sustainable. You have a smaller crew.
But it hasn't reflected in the production of these shows, right? We're still waiting.
Not always.
I would say more often than not, like, we are looking at, like, you made 8 episodes and now you're gone for 18 months at a time. It's like the Avatar live action remake was a big hit, according to Netflix. Just got to take their word on it. But according to them, it was a big hit. They renewed it for seasons 2 and 3, which would theoretically retell the entire story of the original animated show, which had 22 episodes a season or whatever, and put it into 8 one-hour episodes and have about the same runtime and tell about the same story. And that show stars kids. They've already had to change the story to try to make sense that those kids are going to grow up as they're filming the show. But more importantly, like, it's been a couple months since that show premiered on Netflix, and yesterday, as we're recording this, they announced it that it's got new showrunners. So, like, we're not even close to that show filming a second season, let alone all of the special effects work. Like, does that second season come out in 2026? That third season in 2027, if you're lucky? I mean, Stranger Things, where's that final season, right? Like, why does that show take, like, 2 years to shoot? I would agree with you if we were still seeing annual releases outside of stuff like The Bear, which I think just shows that that writer's room and that production is a well-oiled machine, as opposed to the bulk of streaming where it's, you know, we'll squeeze it on the calendar when it's done, and then you turn around and 2 years goes by between seasons.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. Like, the new Game of Thrones show, what's it called?
Three Body Problem, right? Or you? Oh, no, you're talking about, sorry, I thought you meant
no,
from the creators.
No, the actual Game of Thrones.
You're talking about House of the Dragon.
House of the Dragon, like, that took 2 years between the seasons.
Yeah.
That was the same. Like, Game of Thrones had a year and a half between seasons, though. Yes. Usually. Because it was like 2011 through 19, and there were seven seasons. So
I think that slowed down near the end of it. I think if you look back.
It did.
Oh, wow.
Eight seasons. Season 7 and 8 had a big gap.
Yeah.
And didn't they release the second half of the last season like 6 months after the
first
half?
If you look on Wikipedia, actually, this is great. They've got the dates for ordered filming and then when it first aired. And it's like season 1, April 2011, season 2, April 2012, season 3, March 31st, 2013. So let's just round up. April 2013, season 4, April 2014, season 5, April 2015, season 6, April 2016. And it's not until season 7 where it's like now it's July 2017, and then season 8 is now it's 2019. We took a 2-year break, and if anything, I would say that's because they didn't know what the fuck they were doing.
Yeah, that's
ran out
true.
Of content.
I mean,
you can see it from the, you know, season 6 is when they start working from outlines, and you can see that suddenly they're like, oh no, we don't know what we're doing. And I don't have an issue, again, like I think we got caught up a little bit maybe on the 22 episode season. I don't have an issue with 10 or 13 episode seasons. I kind of have an issue with 8 episode seasons, but I don't really have an issue with shorter seasons in general that follow kind of the classic HBO, right? Like 13 episode seasons of The Sopranos, for example, right? What my problem is that like these shows are now also like not just 8 episodes a season, but are doing the see you in 2026 kind of thing. And I think it's like an unsustainable way to make entertainment and to make people care about entertainment. Like, do a third of the people who watched season 1 of Avatar go back for season 2 in 2 years? Probably not.
I mean, it happened with Game of Thrones or with Stranger Things.
That's true. That is a outlier in my thing. Although,
I mean, those kids are like 35 years old now. So
I kind of think that show is pretty bad for half its run. So maybe I'm an outlier in how I think about it. But
anyway, all right, we gotta end it there. I think Jules will probably end up putting half of this as a separate episode, which wouldn't be a bad thing. It would probably just be a bonus episode, which is good for 100th episode. I have to go though, because my I have to pick up my kid from school in like 25 minutes.
Oh Jesus, I'm sorry.
And this has been amazing. And I just want to say before we end the show, and Jules, please put this in the, if you do end up splitting the show, please put it in the primary show. I just want to say thank you so much to everybody who has joined us over the last 100 episodes. You know, we're not making money from this podcast. We're doing this because we love it. It has gone through a bunch of iterations. A couple of cast members, Ara, we miss you. This is a labor of love that we do in spite of having absolutely no time every week.
Especially you.
And like the demands on my time, the demands on Will's time are extremely high. You know, viewership, I'll just be honest, it hasn't grown too much since we started, but that's okay. We do this because we love it. And the people that come back week after week are the reason that we record this. It's like working out where you dread it until you get back and then all the endorphins are going. And then by the end of it, you're like, oh, I wish I did this more.
Yeah.
It's how I feel about recording this show. Like we always say we need to get our shit together. We need to put together show notes. We're going to do it on Wednesday. We're going to do it on Thursday. And then Friday comes and we haven't done it yet. And then we're like, shit, when are we going to do it? And then we do it and it's great. And it just speaks to, you know, I love recording this with you, Will. Jules, we're so grateful to have you as our producer. And we are extremely grateful to have you joining us week after week. So my sincerest thanks and appreciation.
I second all that. I won't belabor the point.
And the lost episode sucks. Okay, so that's it. That's the show. Send us your feedback. Thank you so much for listening. And as Will intimated, we will be together for the first time. I have never met you in person.
Yeah.
So we will be together for the first time in Montreal, not next week, but the week after. And we will make a point to record an episode together. So that will be a lot of fun. Until then, we'll record next week. But thank you so much for listening. And we'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye. We'll be right back. Are we doing video this week?
I can't.
That's fine. Got all dressed up for nothing.
You put on a shirt.
I put on a shirt, exactly. I took a shower.
I mean, it's probably just good for your overall hygiene.
I normally showered. I'm joking. I'm if anything, I take too many showers.
Oh, really?
I don't know how many showers should you take a day?
One or less, maybe, unless you work out a lot.
I was gonna say I took two yesterday, but that was because I went for a run after work at the gym, and when I got back, I was soaked in sweat.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. I'm not gonna judge. All right,
then I take the perfect amount of showers, one a day,
that's fine.
Plus more if I work out. Cool.